This is Find Your Dream Job, the podcast that helps you get hired, have the career you want, and make a difference in life. I'm your host, Mac Pritchard, and I'm also the publisher of Mac's List, an online community that connects talented professionals with meaningful work. I believe everyone can find a job they love, but to do that, you need to learn the skills to build a successful career. From professional networking to personal branding, you've got to get good at job hunting. This show helps you do this. Every week on Find Your Dream Job, I talk to a different career expert. We discuss the tools and tactics you need to find your dream job. This week, I'm talking to Jan Melnick about how to clinch a job offer. Before we get started, however, I want to ask you a favor. I want to make sure you get the most useful job search advice possible. And to help do this, we're doing a short listener survey. We want to know what you like and don't like about the show. And we want to hear your ideas for topics we should cover in future episodes. And finally, we want to get to know you better. It's a quick poll, and it has just a handful of questions. I'd be grateful if you filled it out. And if you do so, you'll be eligible to win a $50 Amazon gift card. Just go to this URL, maxlist.org, find your dream job survey, and let us hear from you by November 20th, 2018. That's when we close the survey. Thanks in advance, and now let's get back to the show. Our guest this week is Jan Melnick. She's a master resume writer and a career strategist. Jan is also a closer. She teaches people how to turn a job interview into a job offer. Jan calls her number one tip the mulligan. It's a killer strategy that helps you stand out. And she says 75% of all job seekers don't use it. Here's another tip from Jan to increase your odds of getting a job offer. Tell the employer what you would do after you start work. This shows your value, Jan tells me in our interview, and it gets the boss thinking about you as a member of the team. And in our conversation, Jan says there's no substitute for preparation. To avoid appearing nervous, she recommends you practice answers to the common questions employers always ask. This will let you show the confidence hiring managers want to see. Do you want to learn more? Join me here in the MaxList studio as I talk with Jan Melnick about how to clinch a job offer. Now let's turn to this week's guest expert, Jan Melnick. Master resume writer and career strategist Jan Melnick founded her company, Absolute Advantage, in 1983. For 35 years now, she's been writing resumes and helping clients find careers they can love. Jan speaks frequently at conferences and companies nationwide, and she teaches business classes at the University of Florida and Bay Path University. She's also the author of 7 career books, and she recently published her first works of fiction on Amazon. She joins us today from Durham, Connecticut. Jan, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for your generous invitation, Mac. A pleasure to be with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. And this topic is one I know we're all going to experience as we go through our careers, and that's how to clinch a job offer. And just to be clear, Jan, we're talking about that point in the job search where you're a finalist and you want to move to the top of the list. You want to make sure if you're competing against one or two other people that you're the one that gets that call back that says, we'd like to make you an offer. Is that right?
Exactly correct. There are a number of things candidates can do, but a few things rise to the top.
Okay. Well, we had a chance to check in with each other before this interview, and you said there's a step, it's your favorite, that every interview finalist can take to increase the odds of a job offer. But you told me, Jan, that 3 out of 4 applicants, 75% of folks out there, don't do it. Now, Jan, what's your secret weapon?
Well, interestingly enough, you don't have to be a golfer to know it. It's called the mulligan, though, referencing the game where you effectively have a do-over, and it is in the form of a very powerful thank you note that should follow every interview along the way. But in particular, the strategy that makes this unique and so effective is the candidate should take that opportunity to revisit anything in the interview that didn't quite go as he or she wished. That inevitable kick yourself in the elevator moment, why didn't I tell them this? Or when they asked me how I would turn around a team's performance, I neglected to share this success story. Or different ways of optimizing production quality, I forgot all about mentioning Lean or Six Sigma and the value I can bring. And so you use the mulligan, the thank you note, to revisit literally, very briefly, any of those moments. And what it does going into any interview, it empowers the candidate to recognize they've got this valuable do-over once the interview is over to really solidify their candidacy and what differentiates them.
So a couple clarifying questions. These are the things that are going through your head when you're the candidate, when you're in the car or on the bus going home and you're kicking yourself and saying, I wish I'd said that. Or maybe you're telling your partner or your spouse, if only I could get on the phone and tell her this. Is that right, Jan?
Exactly. It's the things that inevitably human beings, we forget. We are not computers. And so there will always be certain points that can be solidified and further detailed and really bring value to that candidate, obviously tying to the things that were most important in the interview.
So I can imagine listeners saying, thank you notes, that's the secret weapon. I send thank you notes. What makes this different?
Most people of the 25% that do write thank you notes typically go with, thank you for the opportunity to meet with you, Mr. Pritchard. It was a pleasure to learn more about this job. I'm very eager to move into the next steps and we'll look forward to hearing from you. Very short, very succinct, and they really bring no further value to the candidate other than that they listen to Emily post along the way. What this is doing, and it can go a full page on an email as needed, 3, 4, 5 core paragraphs that speak to some of the very specific things that came out in the course of the interview and what the candidate can bring to that opportunity that is going to make a difference and deliver results. So it is very much a pragmatic and strategic tool.
And in your experience, because I know you've worked with so many people in their careers who are looking for work or want to move ahead, do most people write these kinds of detailed notes, Jan?
No, frankly, I would say they don't. Many folks do opt to retain a strategist, a writer to assist them, a career writer typically, but it can be anyone with a great command of the English language and who can help elucidate some of those details that can be crafted into very concise messages. But even the most rudimentary of writers should be able to craft a document that goes beyond just the courtesies expressed in a thank you to talk about some of the very specific things that did come out in the interview and where their experience aligns. They can do things such as, you may have noted on my resume that when I worked at XYZ, I did have a chance to build a team that provided XYZ as it relates to what the new employer might be looking for. So it's just going a little deeper, taking a little more time, and hours not too little to spend on this type of mulligan thank you that is a do-over and add-on to their great interview, we hope.
Okay, so anybody can do this. You don't need an MFA in creative writing. And
correct.
So I want to dig in a little into this, Jan, because I'm sure you know, because you work with candidates a lot, that many people are looking for ways to stand out from other finalists. And what I'm hearing you say is if, say, in a typical selection process, it's down to you and two other finalists, and you send in a letter like this, you use the mulligan, that does give you a chance to stand out because most other finalists are probably not doing this, are they?
That is very true. And actually, a candidate can use this strategy right from the get-go with the very first round of interviews that typically will progress through multiple interviews in today's hiring climate, which can extend over weeks and sometimes months. And so by using this strategy consistently throughout every step of the interview, this individual is serving to differentiate himself or herself and the value he or she will ultimately bring to the workplace.
And this is, as you mentioned, as people go through a selection process, there's often one, two, three, or maybe even four or five interviews. So they should take advantage of this at every step. What about format, Jan? Is it an email or is it a handwritten note?
I strongly recommend an email for the timeliness. We don't want any time to separate the candidates rising to the top from decision-making on who makes it to the next level or to the offer. And 2 or 3 days in the mail is too long to wait. So even though a handwritten note or a handwritten letter or a typewritten letter might have been the approach years ago, today email is the expected means by which someone will communicate. It should be individualized to every individual who participated in the interview. No copying, no mass production of the same letter. The candidate should take the time to individualize each letter, bringing in the appropriate mulligan stories to support that candidate's interview with that person.
Okay, so don't leave the room without knowing who you've spoken with. And it's common to have perhaps several people on a panel, but know their names and ask and be sure that you can communicate with them by email. Is that right?
Most definitely. If there had been someone in HR, say, coordinating the interviews, that individual can be pivotal in providing the contact names, correct spelling, and email addresses. And the candidate should never hesitate to go back after the fact to the person coordinating the interviews to get that critical information. So even if they left the interview and, oops, forgot to get business cards, definitely make the follow-up call or email to the person coordinating interviews. It's really important that every person be thanked in a way that has substance using the mulligan.
Okay, so we've talked about who you should write to and what you should say in the length. Any other tips about sending a mulligan?
Well, I always think a call to action is great to include in any correspondence. And so recapping what the next steps are in the interview, which should be one of the questions the candidate asks when the tables turn and they inevitably say, "So, Mac, do you have any questions for us?" You would never say, "Oh, no, thank you. I believe you've answered everything." Instead, you would have carefully thought through questions that you would moderate depending on what has already transpired, but always ending with, "What are the next steps in the process? When shall I expect a phone call from you to move on to the next level?" And so that should be recapped at the bottom of the mulligan thank you letter.
I'm glad you brought that up because I know many candidates forget to ask that, or they're afraid to ask those questions either in the interview or in follow-up notes. And it's perfectly acceptable to do that. In fact, employers expect you to do that, don't they, Jan?
They certainly do. And it almost conveys a sense of course I know I'm moving on. There's no question. So it relays a confidence that's important to convey.
Yeah, and I know we're going to touch on that later in the interview, the importance of demonstrating confidence and how that can inspire more interest in hiring you from an employer. Before we do that, though, we're going to take a break because there are a lot of other points I know you have about how people can clinch a job offer. Particularly want to talk about ways, and I know you feel passionate about this, that people can find out more about the employer's needs and show what they can do for the hiring manager. So we're going to pause now and we'll be back in a moment with Jan Melnick, a master resume writer and a career strategist. And we're talking this week about how to clinch a job offer. Are you uncomfortable talking about money? You're not alone, especially if you're doing a job search. Too many job candidates I meet wait for employers to bring up salary, usually after several interviews. And that can waste your time and your energy. You may not learn, for example, what a job pays until you receive an offer. And you may discover that it's an amount far below your needs. It happened to me once. Many years ago, I was the finalist for a position with a trade association. And what I was told was a final courtesy interview with a CEO. I was asked if I could accept half of the publicly posted salary. This request came after multiple interviews. In other words, I wasted the time I put into the opportunity. And it wouldn't have happened if I talked about money earlier. You can avoid this problem and get a higher salary when a job offer comes your way. I've got a new guide. It's called How to Talk About Money in an Interview. And in it, I show you how to do salary research before meeting a hiring manager. And I also give you answers to a question many of us dread. What are your salary expectations? And I tell you when and how to bring up your salary needs. Get your free copy today. Go to maxlist.org/moneytalk. Negotiate the better pay you deserve. Go to maxlist.org/moneytalk. Again, to get your copy of How to Talk About Money in an Interview, go to maxlist.org/moneytalk. Now, let's get back to the show. We're back in the MaxList studio, and our guest expert this week is Jan Milnick. She's a master resume writer and a career strategist, and we're talking, our topic, Jan, is how to clinch a job offer, and you made a terrific case for the mulligan, using letters, or rather emails, to communicate to hiring managers additional points that you might want to make after an interview. Now, let's also talk about other things that people can do to clinch a job offer. And how important is it in these interviews, in any job interview, Jan, to draw an employer out about their needs?
It's absolutely critical. It is the only way a candidate can really then circle back and demonstrate alignment between their experience, their background, their education, training, credentialing with what the employer is seeking to do. So that is absolutely imperative. It requires a good memory in the course of the interview to, while combating normal nerves, to retain what some of those key needs are, to have questions that help the employer describe what the challenges are, whether it's a newly created position because of growth, whether someone has been promoted, trying to get that inside story. That gives the candidate much to work with, both in the interview, in conveying all of the value and how they can really deliver the results the employer is seeking, perhaps how quickly they can hit the ground running because they've got the experience that the employer is seeking, backed by good examples. I always say quantifiable. Throw in numbers where you can. Let's suppose it's a position in finance, accounts receivable. If you've got a track record of bringing down the days outstanding and collecting monies that previously had gone uncollected for months, things like that, you would want to quickly share examples with numbers supporting that. So being able to know their needs and try to hone in on your background and what matches, and then again using the mulligan we've previously discussed to bring out additional points that maybe didn't get represented at the interview.
Okay, so it's important to understand the employer's needs, and it's important to walk into the interview room with examples that will demonstrate your areas of expertise. So you're sitting in that interview chair, Jan, and you're talking to one or several people across a conference table. What do you do to what kind of questions do you ask to draw them out so you can get those insights?
Well, of course, it would be linked to whatever the particular position was, the discipline, the industry, and the research that you've done prior to going in. But you can ask questions such as, what are some of the challenges you faced with this department or in this role? What are some of the things you are looking for a candidate to bring in immediately to help make a difference? What would you say from reviewing my background most interested you about my candidacy and how I can be the solution? So you would try to bring it back and try to align again with your experience as the candidate by imploring them to share with you challenges, opportunities, perhaps what areas have not worked out so well for you. What are areas that we can help turn around here? I'd love to know more about the organization because it allows me to think creatively about how I might be able to bring in some ways of turning this around for you.
And as you ask those questions and the employer responds, what should you be listening for as that manager across the table talks to you?
Exactly. Great question. You want those little light bulbs to go off. You want to have little things populate in your mind that you can immediately weave in to your next questions or responses. And then more importantly, you want to retain this so that when you use my second greatest strategy to clinch a job offer, you've got content and material to further flesh out in building a case for your candidacy. Would you like to know more about that?
I would. And tell me more, Jen.
Well, it is a tool that I won't say necessarily that I created, but I think I did because I'd never heard of anyone doing this years ago, and I've been doing it for probably 15 years. It's called the 30, 60, 90-day follow-up to job interviewing. And what it is, it's a tool that is best used after generally the second or third interview. So you're moving up as a semi-finalist and maybe close to being a finalist, again, depending on the type of organization and the level. And it's where you really want to make a difference in your campaign by taking the time to develop a plan. Generally, it's about 3 to 5 pages. It's a Word document that would be attached to an email, and it would articulate, based on what you've learned, based on the research you've done, everything from the first or second round of interviews, you embed and draw a line between what you can do to address and what you can deliver across a timeline. The 30, 60, 90 day works for many. I've done them sometimes where they're 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, or quarter. Depends on the organization and the level, again, that you're going in. But you would articulate in such a way, based on information shared to date, this would be my preliminary plan around what I might expect to do in my first month in the job, and then in month two and in month three. And the document should have enough specificity so that the decision maker, the hiring manager, recognizes, wow, this is something that absolutely practically positions this person as being on the team already. She clearly has a good grasp of what our needs are and what the challenges are, and she's done a great job in articulating what she can do and the experiences she has. She's a great listener. She captured all this in one or two interviews and now is giving us something that demonstrates what she will do. There's no worry about the candidate's ideas being stolen because the document does not have the depth of detail. Typically, it's missing names of the key players in the organization that would be part of the plan. But it does outline and demonstrate a candidate's creativity, the way they go about problem solving, the fact that they are very proactive and action-oriented in crafting such a strategy. And again, this document developed right after about the second interview, or maybe the third, if they know there are going to be multiple more interviews, is the perfect time to truly separate them from the field of other semifinalists.
Okay, so it's a relatively short document, 3 to 5 pages, I heard you say, and it focuses on 3 time periods typically. How do you recommend people structure it? Is it as simple as saying, here are, you know, 3 to 5 key challenges I heard you raise, and here are my ideas about how to address them within this time period?
Yes, and in fact, the way that you've just said that goes to the conversational nature of it. It's not a fully amplified business plan or marketing plan, but rather it's a working document, and it can actually serve, once employed, the individual with a great game plan for going forward. And words such as you use that make it very approachable, and I always say, you know, couch it in such terms as, based on the preliminary information that I've gathered, certainly once on board, I'd have an opportunity to meet with the other team members and gain their ideas and really build a collaborative plan. But based on what I know today, here are some of my thoughts on how I can make a difference in helping to drive this initiative or lead the organizational change.
Okay. Keep it humble and keep the door open to lots and lots of input. But again, it's an opportunity to demonstrate what you can do for the hiring manager, isn't it?
Exactly. Professionally formatted, proofread very carefully. It must be perfect, even though it has a tone that's very accessible.
Okay. I have to add, as an employer, I've actually received something like that, I think twice now, and I don't remember what those documents said. It's been some years, but I'm still thinking about them and those people years later. It helped them stand out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, so that again, our goal here is to clinch a job offer. Why is this going to be persuasive to an employer when they get an email with a file like that attached?
Clearly, this candidate is someone who goes above and beyond 110%, all the cliched expressions many folks might use in an interview when describing themselves. This person is demonstrating a real commitment to joining the team, to understanding and asking the right types of questions, and being that catalyst to action that the company probably would value, no matter what the discipline, what the industry is. It really serves to separate a candidate because they can walk in the door with a possible working plan for getting started. And let's face it, in these days, many, many organizations do not have well-amplified job descriptions. They don't even necessarily have great performance evaluations or an appraisal process that would possibly spell out actions for the next 6 months or a year. This can be a pivotal tool that can be used across an organization, and it can drive real interest and truly separate any other candidate, this individual, from anyone else competing for the same role.
Now, we've talked about two strategies here, the mulligan, and then the second one is this 30, 60, and 90-day follow-up plan. The third one I know you feel passionate about as well is preparation, and this is an old-fashioned one, but you don't think people should walk into an interview room just winging it, do you, Jan?
I certainly do not. Even the most talented sales or marketing person who's got that, we'll call it gift of gab, is doing themselves a disservice to not prepare thoroughly. And probably my best tip on the preparation for interviewing is to force oneself to go through every question anticipated, researched, that stumbled them before, and do their responses out loud and record themselves. Most people cringe when they hear themselves, but it's a really effective way to know the type of question that might catch you in an interview. And while the preparation is important, rehearsal should never be to the point of memorization. The idea, rather, is to become very familiar with how you are going to respond to certain types of queries. Almost always you can anticipate, well, Mac, tell me something about yourself. That's the classic icebreaker. It gives the interviewer a chance to remember which candidate you were, glance down at the resume that they probably only spent 5 seconds with earlier, and revisit why you're sitting there while you kind of walk through the reasons for being there and why you're the right candidate. But know the other answers. Yes, people still ask about three greatest strengths and what are your weaknesses. You should have something prepared. You should think about those funny oddball questions. If you were a tree, what would you be? Or if you were a color or a cereal brand, what would you be? And the answer does not matter to those questions, by the way. It is how you creatively respond to an off-putting question that can sometimes rattle a job seeker. So know the way in which you would respond to curveball questions. Think about things that have tripped you up in your career. When might you have failed? What would be an example of something that happened? What did you learn from that? And really try to Google, if you must, the 50 most popular interview questions and make yourself do them out loud so that you can ensure a 90-second, maybe 120-second response that is clear and articulate.
And how does this kind of preparation, Jan, help you clinch that job offer?
It really cements your value proposition in a way that demonstrates a confidence and a competence in what your capabilities are. And someone able to do that across every step of the interview really defines themselves as a professional who belongs on that team within that organization, rather than someone who is stumbling, who is grasping to come up with answers, who is overly nervous for having not prepared well. That can make the big difference when it comes to the job offer.
Well, I love the practicality of your advice here. And it hits on something I hear so many job seekers talk to me about, which is how can I stand out? What can I do to show that I'm different? And the strategies you're sharing with us require effort and time, but they're uncommon. In your experience, do you find they do help people distinguish themselves from the other candidates?
They really do. It's an investment when you think of this time put in, and you are correct. Every one of these things takes a little more time than skipping a thank you note altogether or dashing one off that's so short and does nothing to differentiate. Every one of these things takes time to do. But if it is a position that a candidate covets and aligns beautifully with their career planning, their goals, and their experience, it is well worth it and truly will be something most of the other people they're competing against are not doing. I can almost guarantee that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jan. Now tell us, what's next for you?
Well, I'm very excited to be going into a new book writing. I am bringing out a new edition of the popular Executive's Pocket Guide to ROI, Resumes and Job Search, with my co-author, Louise Kersmark. And we begin our writing next week, actually. We intend this to be available the first part of 2019. The first edition of that book, gosh, it's just over 10 years now. It's still available on Amazon and helped a lot of people, but we knew it was time to get back to the drawing board with an all-new edition. So that's what's on my plate.
Good. Well, we'll be sure to include a link to the book in the show notes and on the website article for this episode. And I know people can learn more about you and your other 7 books at janmelnick.com. Jan, thanks for being on the show this week.
It's been my pleasure. A lot of fun.
For me as well. Take care. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jan Melnick. One of the reasons I wanted to have her on the show is I hear from people again and again, what can I do to stand out? And Jan's laid out 3 very practical steps you can take that will help you stand apart from other applicants in any job interview process, but even when it gets down to the final 2 or 3. And again, her advice takes some time and effort to implement. But if you are passionate about that job, if it's the one you really want, it is, I think, time well spent. So I hope you'll take her advice to heart if you're going through a job search right now or the next time that you do your own search. When you're ready to clinch that job offer, money's going to be a big part of it. And you don't want to wing it, again, whether it's going into an interview or having a conversation about money. You need to get the salary you deserve. And you need to prepare for those conversations. Our new guide, How to Talk About Money in an Interview, will help you do that. So be ready the next time you're negotiating salary, whether it's a job offer or a promotion. Go to maxlist.org/moneytalk to get your copy of How to Talk About Money in an Interview today. Again, that's maxlist.org/moneytalk. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Find Your Dream Job, and join us next Wednesday. Our special guest will be Laura Gastner-Otting, and she'll explain how you can build your network so opportunity comes calling. Until next time, thanks for letting us help you find your dream job.